All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, talking to you from New York City on this, the second day of November 2021. I want to thank each of you for listening to this show, making it one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. Also encourage you to send along whatever comments you have about this show to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. We do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Sponsors for today's show, Novo Resources, El Oro Resources, Hannon Metals, Labrador Gold Corp, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, and Firefox Gold. Before I begin talking about today's show, I want to remind you that on November 12th and 13th, the Metals Investor Forum is meeting in person in Vancouver for the first time since the breakout of the COVID-19 pandemic. To attend this two-day event in Vancouver, which is free of charge, go to the Metals Investor Forum website, that's metalsinvestorforum.com, and simply submit your name and email. This event will also be available to you virtually as it was during the pandemic. But again, to access it virtually or to attend in person, you need to go to metalsinvestorforum.com to sign up. I've titled today's show, The Most Undervalued Equity Market Sector. Well, surprisingly, that's gold and silver miners. John Rubino, Gwen Preston, and Eric Coffin are returning today. And just this morning, Dr. Quentin Henning agreed to come on the show today to talk about a couple very exciting drill results for a couple of very exciting companies, I should say, namely Lion One Metals and El Oro Resources. Both of those, of course, are sponsors to this show. So Quentin will be with me in just a couple of minutes from now to give us an update on what these latest drill results mean. For the first time since the 1970s, wage inflation is just beginning to spiral upwards as supply chain problems, pandemic lockdowns, as well as guaranteed income and all manner of other socialist stay-at-home programs are serving to boost the leverage of labor in America, not seen since the 1970s. After the 1970s, the ruling elite decided they could break the backs of labor through globalization and offshoring higher-priced jobs to Mexico, China, or other third-world countries. But now all that is changing at this time. Hourly wages are surging higher, and as John Rubino will note in the second half of today's show, we are seeing a huge number of worker strikes and work stoppages across the country. If I'm right in believing that the cost of living is just starting to rise, and that unlike in 1980, the Fed will be unable to allow rates to rise to market levels, but will instead add monetary fuel to the fires of inflation, then rising inflation will likely provide an excuse for labor to ask for still more higher wages, potentially leading to a spiraling of inflation, even something more akin to hyperinflation. Those and related topics, again, we'll be discussing with John Rubino. And also we'll talk to John a little bit about the gold and silver mining industry, which is really doing well. We're not seeing it in the share prices necessarily, but we're seeing it in the balance sheets and the income statements of the gold and silver producers. So we'll be talking to John about that in the second half of today's show. And right after our first commercial break, I will be speaking with Eric Coffin and Gwen Preston, who will be joining me and other newsletter writers at the Metals Investor Forum. And they'll be with me in just a few minutes after our first commercial break. Both Eric and Gwen they always have some, I think, very valuable insights about the markets, and they have always some interesting companies that they're following, so I hope you'll stick around to hear what they have to say right after we go to break. But right now, I'm really happy to tell you that Quentin Henning is with me to talk about Lion One Mines and El Oro Resources. Thanks for joining me, Quentin.
Always a pleasure, Jay.
Really good to have you, and thank you so much on such short notice for being available to us. Lion One Metals, they had a market cap around $134 million in U.S. money, selling at a mere 86 cents earlier this morning, and I made sure after I saw the news release that I added a few shares to my portfolio. The headline number announced in the news this morning was 33.4 grams of gold over 3.9 meters coming from that company's Alkaline Gold Project, which you are really have been an advisor to the company on. But what can you tell us about these latest results, and just sort of give us an overview of the project in general, if you would?
Certainly. Look, the Tuvati project is in Fiji. It's part of the, you know, the Circumpacific Ring of Fire, as they say. It is a gold deposit that's generated by magmatism, you know, volcanism that occurred about 4 million years ago. And in particular, the volcanism here, the magmas had a lot of alkaline metal dissolved in them, and these alkaline-rich magmas tend to carry a lot of gold. So when they come up and they start to cool and solidify, they expel the fluids during the late stages, the waning stages of emplacement. They inject those fluids up into cracks and fissures in the ground above and can produce some very, very high-grade gold deposits. This is really one of several that are found around this region. You've got Vaticolo, which is nearby. It's about a 7 million ounce mined deposit. You got the Porgera deposit over in New Guinea, very similar. Lahir, very similar. These are just gems when it comes to gold endowment.
And they have a pretty good resource, and they're planning to go into production at some point. Here, I think they're working on it. They're actually doing some drilling from underground and preparing, I think, for mining, at least for test mining. But as I understand it, Quentin, these are deeper, higher grade holes. And in fact, I think the company gave an estimate of an increase in resources, something like 25%. Maybe it's too early to say that for sure. But is it getting richer? And would you expect that at depth here?
Yeah, just to clarify a bit, look, the existing resource extends from surface down maybe about 400 meters below surface. Uh-huh. And these drill holes that have been drilled here recently, starting back in July of 2020, are targeting a much higher grade feeder structure below the existing resource. So this new drilling has not been included in an updated resource, but it is very exciting to see. If you look, you know, they've extended gold down, I believe, 720 meters below surface at this point, which basically extends the deposit something like 53% greater depth than previously. You know, that's a great outcome. They're seeing higher grades in this area, so you're seeing a weighted average grade about 23 grams per ton in this lower high-grade mineralization. You know, it's exciting because this is just the beginning. I think there's going to be other structures down there, but, you know, they're very focused on what they call this 500 structure, which is turning into a real gem. And these kind of structures can make a huge difference once it goes time for mining. You know, if they were to access this, you know, think about those kind of grades. There's very few mines on the planet that have that kind of grade.
And these things can extend to considerable depth below that current level of drilling?
Yes. Alkaline systems such as this are known to go down, you know, 1,200, 1,500 meters easily. Right now, they're about half that distance. So I think the thing is warming up as it's going down, and that the best indication for that is coming from the grade that we see in this structure. Again, 23 grams per ton weighted average is considerably higher. It's almost three times higher than the resource grade above.
And there are also some other surface targets that are part of this same system, presumably, right?
That's correct. The company does have one of its drills operating on new targets around the Navalawa Caldera. They've been drilling at Banana Creek, which is about 3.5 kilometers northeast of the Tuvatu resource. Now they're drilling in an area between Banana Creek and Tuvatu. There will be, you know, some news around those drill holes over the next few months. Interestingly, the company has increased its activity. It's got 6 rigs operating, but it's also doing underground sampling and stuff. And they're also doing a resampling program of historic core. So funny enough, they are seeing a huge inflow of samples right now. The lab has a backlog of about 3,000 samples. It is in the lab. But, you know, it's a good thing because they have a lot of good results in the queue.
Yeah, they have an on-site lab.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So they're not held back like a lot of other companies. Well, that's a gold story. And I know that you've been very bullish on this project, this alkaline deposit. You've identified it as such and have noted that these things can get to be real world-class deposits. We have to see what happens. But certainly the news that came out today is very, very positive. Okay, let's talk about El Oro Resources, a market cap of $188 million in U.S. money. Today, and they announced drill results into the there's a series of these breccia pipes that are mineralized with silver tin polymetallics, but heavily in silver and tin. Very unique deposit and very, very large with a whole number of these breccia pipes. And they talked today about the Santa Barbara breccia pipe as well as the central breccia pipe. But the headline number was 100 grams of silver equivalent over 188.5 meters. From the Santa Barbara pipe. Give us an update on this project, if you would, Quentin, in a couple of minutes.
Yes, look, the company has identified what is likely going to end up being a world-class silver-tin polymetallic deposit, much like the Potosí deposit, which is a few tens of kilometers north of here. Okay, this region in Bolivia is known for these deposits. It's unusual to see such high silver-tin and other metals all combined together. But these are just absolutely hands-down world-class deposits. The results today out of the Santa Barbara breccia pipe, the hole that was released, is from their resource target area that they've set their sights on. They're basically going to drill an initial resource in and around the Santa Barbara pipe that is in an area that I believe now is about 2 kilometers long from north to south and about 600 meters, 500 or 600 meters wide and about 600 meters deep. It's exciting to see continued results like this. I mean, think about 100 gram silver equivalent amounts to, you know, in gold terms, say, is about 1.35, 1.4 gram gold equivalent. Well, this is 188 meter intercept. You know, these are crazy kind of numbers. Like, there's a lot of dollar value in this rock. Now, they did also have results from the central breccia pipe. They've done drilling at central breccia, but they've decided to focus the initial resource where they have the most drilling at Santa Barbara. But nonetheless, central also delivered some results, mainly higher tin values. The central breccia is clearly shaping up to be a high tin porphyry. Type system. So they have, you know, I believe there was like 12 meters of 0.55% tin or something, which is great because, you know, this is really one of the first primary tin discoveries on planet Earth in many, many years. So this could be a very important deposit as tin prices are clearly going to remain elevated for the foreseeable future. I think tin is trading close to $40,000 a metric ton right now. Wow. It's an amazing discovery. They're steadily seeing results come through like this. Bill Pearson said recently that they're going to include drill holes through November, I believe now, to encompass that bigger area in their initial target. It will take a bit of time to get all the assays back and then establish a resource. But I would say sometime next year, I don't know if it's Q1 or Q2, but they should have what I think will be a very robust resource around this exciting story.
Well, I'd like to talk to you sometime about the tin markets because it's something I'm not that familiar with. I guess I need to do a bit of research on it since it's becoming such an important part of this project.
I did my dissertation on tin, of all things.
Well, then I guess we can just go to you then, perhaps, and for a fee, I suppose. But I'm only kidding. But you certainly deserve fees for all the work you do, and want to thank you very much on such short notice for being available to us today, Quentin. Thank you. It's very, very important to our listeners. So thank you very much.
Anytime.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Gwen Preston and Eric Coffin will be with me, talk about some of their top exploration stories and what their thoughts are about the precious metals market. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Firefox Gold is actively exploring in Finland, where recent discoveries have sparked a new gold rush. Firefox controls a major portion of a prospective gold belt, giving the company a distinct advantage for exploration and strategic partnerships. The company's strong international leadership team, combined with its Finland-based exploration specialists, will put Firefox on the crest of the coming wave of gold discoveries. Firefox Gold trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol FFOX. Go to firefoxgold.com to subscribe for updates.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times Good Times. I'm really happy to tell you that two of my friends from the Metals Investor Forum, Gwen Press and Eric Coffin, are with me to share some of their thoughts about the junior exploration markets and hopefully a couple of their favorite stories that they're going to be talking about in Vancouver at the Metals Investor Forum. We'll be meeting there. As I noted earlier in the show, for the first time, we're going to be meeting live in person this is the first time since March 2020 when we met in Toronto at the PDAC, Metals Investor Forum. So it's going to be great to meet up in person again, and you need to go to the Metals Investor Forum website, metalsinvestorforum.com, to sign up either to attend in person, and it will be live virtually as well this time. So I hope you all take the opportunity to tune in and catch up with some of the newsletter writers' favorite stories. Gwen and Eric, thank you so much for joining me again.
Happy to come on.
Thanks for having us, Jay.
It's really good to have both of you with me. And Gwen is known as the Resource Maven and resourcemavens.ca for her work. You can sign up for her letter there, learn more about what she does. And with Eric, it's HRAadvisory.com. All right, so... Well, thanks for joining us, and I'm really glad that you could be with us today to sort of give us your thoughts about the markets. Maybe starting with you, Eric, what are your thoughts about the silver and gold markets? I think a lot of us are pretty annoyed, to say, put it one way anyway, in terms of everything else is going up except gold and silver, and we're having this incredible surge of inflation and wage inflation like we haven't seen, I would argue, since the 1970s almost. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, as the old saying goes, you're not paranoid if they really are out to get you, which apparently they are in the case of people who buy gold and silver stock. I think we've got this weird dichotomy right now, and I think tomorrow is actually going to be very telling. So everybody should be marking 11 o'clock Pacific Wednesday, November 3rd on their calendar, because that's the next Fed announcement. My personal expectation is they are going to announce taper tomorrow. I don't know what the timeline will be, but the bond market seems to think they'll be done tapering by the middle of next year. What I'm hoping for is sort of a buy on news after a couple of months of sell on rumor. Mm-hmm. We're in this weird situation where you've got very negative real interest rates because of inflation, but you do get these inflection points where traders in the gold market especially seem to worry about, is that gap going to widen or narrow? And if they're worried that the Fed's going to get aggressive, they're worried that the negative rates are going to get less negative, and they get paranoid and sell. The truth mm-hmm. is we are in a macro environment where gold should perform, and silver and commodities in general, actually, should mm-hmm. perform quite well like they did in the 70s. I'm not sure I'm ready to call it stagflation, but I don't see how we don't have negative rates for years, honestly. I just don't see how the Fed gets out of the corner it's painted itself into, honestly.
Yeah, it seems very difficult. Don't know. As Daniel DiMartino Booth said, the Fed can't raise rates into a declining economy, but at the same time, they can't not raise rates. So between a rock and a hard place. Gwen, your thoughts on gold and silver or whatever else you want to talk about?
How long have you got? I mean, I agree with what you guys just said. I certainly expect them to announce a taper tomorrow. We'll see what the reaction is to that. As Eric points to, the bond market has voiced their opinion on that. They think it's happening. But there is also this mixed messaging in the yield curve. And I think it's partly because, you know, last time they tried to, you know, cut back on bond purchasing, the market threw a fit and they had to walk it back. And sure, mm-hmm. every instance is different. And last time they were raising rates and then did the taper. And this time, I guess they're doing it the other way around because they can't raise rates. Mm-hmm. So who knows exactly what the response will be. But I don't think the market's going to take it lying down. I mean, the market is all about, they learned last time in 2018, well, if we just throw a fit, then mm-hmm. they'll step it back and we can get all the accommodation that we need to continue this endless bull market. So why would mm-hmm. they not try that again, right? And the Fed's right. unspoken mandate is now to support the stock market, which leads mm-hmm. to the whole other thing, which is that we have these incredibly high valuations in the broad market, and mm-hmm. that is detracting interest from all tangible stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Value stocks are not doing what growth stocks are. And that's mm-hmm. because I used to say that one of the things I loved about being a metals and mining investor is because we're dealing with things you can put your hands on, right? It's real. Gold is silver. Copper is, or gold, yeah. is silver. Gold is real. Copper is real. You can put your hands on it. And the harsh irony is that now it's almost like we get knocked for dealing with things that are real. Yeah. Instead, people want to buy Shiba Inu, you know, bitcoins. and like it's yeah. all, they just want to buy speculation. How that all comes to be, I don't know. But I do expect a bit of it. What's that?
What's that, Eric?
They've got an MFP for that, Gwen. You've got an NFT for everything. You know,
so I do think there'll be a bit of a tantrum because of whatever tightening comes. Inflation, they're not calling it transitory anymore, but it is very structural. Like in terms, it's all about, you know, bottlenecks. We're in a weird place, but I think there's going to be a tantrum. I think they're going to have to step back on tightening, easing any concerns that the market has about real rates becoming less negative. And at some point, that just has to work for gold and silver. And then adding to it, I really think we're set up for a strong commodities market as a whole because of inflation and demand in an electrifying world. So I think it's going to work. Just the timing is very hard to predict precisely because things are pretty strange right now.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, Gwen, that all these overvaluations, a bubble, I think you could, a lot of people certainly think of the equity prices, bond prices for sure. We're in bubble territory. And yet the mm-hmm. one sector that is doing very well, the gold and silver miners, it was brought out by Crescat Capital recently that they were the only non-financial sector in the S&P 500 is gold and silver miners that had inflation adjusted positive free cash flow. So, you know, it's really, and all the other sectors are sucking wind. The worst was utilities, real estate down at the bottom, healthcare, everything else in the system. Everything was negative after you adjust for inflation, except the gold and silver miners. And this comes after a period of time. We had a long period of time in which the gold miners weren't doing very well. So maybe, Eric, I'd like to ask you, what do you think accounts for the strong profits of the senior miners in the gold and silver sector, and why do you think the share prices aren't really responding? Or maybe they are. I'm not sure. I haven't kept up with the majors that much.
I mean, they've responded some, but not as much as people hoped. I think when most of the miners came out with their Q3 one thing that I think spooked people a little, although it maybe shouldn't have been as big a surprise as it was, that since everybody else is talking about it, is, you know, they were talking about cost pressures, and that took some of the shine off of things. I mean, they'd had a bit of a rally, not a huge one, a bit of a rally from the end of September until the Q3 stuff came out. But almost without exception, they were all noting about cost pressures. And the mining sector has always been a sector that is prone to that, just because it's just the nature of the mining business, where mines are. You can't get away from dealing with a lot of transportation costs, because you're usually shipping things over long distance into mine sites. But I think that said, you know, like you said, it's one of the few inflation-adjusted cash flow positive sectors out there. And I think that story is going to improve. Plus, the miner, I think people outside the sector don't realize how much miners have cleaned up their balance sheet. I mean, gold miners were kind of famous for having terrible balance sheets, but those days are old.
Right.
Most of these guys have paid their debt. A lot of them are actually debt-free, and they've got huge amounts of cash, like huge amounts of cash. I think everyone's waiting to see the M&A wave, which, you know, there's been some, but there hasn't been huge amounts of it. But, you know, much like gold and silver having their day again, I think the M&A wave is going to have its day again before too much longer, because they're all running into reserve addition problems, and they all have a lot of money. There's a lot of, I think we'll see a lot of probably M&A in, say, 2022. There's a lot of companies that are getting to the point, like the Great Bears of the world, where they'll have numbers out there, and I think these big guys will start pulling the trigger.
Oh, it would certainly seem so. And I mean, we've seen a decline in production, new discoveries very dramatically over the last number of years. So I'm wondering if that might be part of the reason that the gold miners are showing good profits, is that they're not getting excited and overpaying for deposits. But as you say, they have money now, which leads me then, I think you just mentioned Great Bear, which certainly comes to mind as one of those targets. But maybe, Gwen, talk about a couple of your favorite exploration stories, and maybe who you're bringing to the Metals Investor Forum.
For sure. And just sort of to continue with the theme that you're talking about, which is M&A, or the lack thereof. I mean, I certainly think that management teams of majors are very gun-shy on M&A because they screwed it up so badly the last time around, so I think they're very hesitant on that. The irony is they're not getting rewarded very much in the market for being careful with their money this time instead of not careful with it. So it's sort of a rock and a hard place for them. At some point, they will have to start buying again, because you can't stay big if you don't have new projects. And so I think, and there have been deals, and I think they will continue, but we're certainly still seeing a focus on dividends and share buybacks and, you know, being in net cash, which is, like you say, anomalous across the stock market. But that's where miners are, not just gold miners. I mean, Freeport McMoRan announced an incredible share buyback and dividend program just today. They're sending out 80% of adjusted free cash flow in dividends. Wow. It's amazing. So if you want to buy just on dividends and you know, balance sheets, then miners are a great place to be. But again, not rampant speculation, so it's a different game than most investors seem to be playing right now. As for projects or companies that I like that are coming to the Metals Investor Forum, one that fits this conversation, I think, is Integra. I mean, Integra is... I wrote about them just last week, and what I said is, you know, they've done this before. They had Integra Gold, which had a great project in Quebec. It just took the steps that were needed to demonstrate it could be a good mine, and they got taken out for it. They did that through a really terrible market, but they just kept stepping forward because this is a team that's focused on creating a real asset. I think that that is exactly what they're doing again at the Delamar project in Idaho. Great jurisdiction. People love Idaho these days. And they're just stepping this thing forward, demonstrating that it has all of the things that you need for it to be a great asset. They did a PEA, 16 months ago, 18 months ago. They will soon, I think in the next month, come out with a PFS for a dramatically larger project. I won't get into the details of how and why, but it's going to be a much larger project. I think it's going to put it in a different category in terms of how it is viewed in the market, because it'll be so much bigger. And they continue to make a bunch of new discoveries, high-grade stuff below the pit that they've outlined, other targets around. So I think Integra, the market, like with a lot of developers, hasn't been paying much attention to it. Its share price is low right now, but it's the kind of project that I think once interest returns to the space, I think Integra is the kind of asset that will get a bunch of attention. I'll quickly mention two others. Banyan, is another one that I really like. They are exploring in Yukon. But what I like is that this is a they have 1 million ounces already. I think that they are they're reliably and efficiently marching their way to 2 million ounces near surface, you know, gold that's very consistent, and where there's lots of opportunity to keep growing it. It sits between two operating mines. It is higher grade than the operating mine next door. So it's just an exploration play where I think the risk is fairly minimal, but the upside could be quite significant if the market decides to start rewarding, you know, the existence of 2 million economic looking ounces in a good jurisdiction on a road. And then I have to throw in a uranium pick because I think uranium is an exciting space. I won't get into that because I would take up more than the rest of your show to do so. and it's a bit of a side angle uranium pick, mm-hmm. which is Vow Ore. So VO is the ticker on the Venture Exchange. If you look them up, they look like they're a PGE company, Platinum Group company, and they are. They have a PGE project in Brazil. That is a good asset. But they pivoted to that when uranium was detested and they couldn't raise money and there was no point progressing the uranium asset that they have in northern Canada. Uranium is back, so they are currently raising $9 million to go back to work on their uranium asset. You know, the market hasn't paid a huge amount of attention. It has, but I think it's a little bit of a sideline way into uranium, and I think that there's a lot of upside potential at that Angulac project in northern Canada. So if you're interested in uranium, get in touch or ask me about it or check out Vow Ore amongst some of my other uranium picks.
And, of course, all three of those companies will be at the Metals Investor Forum, I believe, Gwen, so people can learn a lot more about them if they either go or watch the show.
So. Absolutely.
All right. Eric, you mentioned Great Bear, and I was really delighted to see that you are inviting them to the show. You know, certainly one that I've loved, and thanks to Gwen. I think, Gwen, kudos to you because you were the one that turned me on to it early on and did very well with it, and so did my subscribers. But talk to us, Eric, about, I would think they would be one obvious M&A target.
Yeah, I mean, Great Bear is an obvious one. I mean, they've got $1 billion market cap, so it's not. I'm not expecting a 10-bagger or anything, but it's probably the most obvious takeover candidate out there. I don't think that happens until they get a resource and maybe a PEA out. I'm hoping to get Chris to clarify the PEA timing because I would think they probably started work on that. They don't need to finish the resource to start the PEA. I think it'll be important for people to understand what they're trying to do here. My expectations are several million ounces in initial resource. Do I think there's a lot more than that? Yeah. But I think what they're going to try to do is show people a very, very high, return, very high margin open pitable deposit at LP, and they'll worry about the other stuff later. Mm-hmm. Basically, what I'm saying is I think even though maybe it comes in 6, 7, 8 million ounces, I think the NPV on this thing is going to be silly. Like I'm honestly expecting a couple of billion in terms of NPV range. So there's still, and that's, you know, they're nowhere near done drilling it. It'll take 20 years to drill that thing off. I don't really think Chris wants to drill it for 20 years. I think he'd rather someone buy it for a really good price and not have to worry about that stuff. Will be at NIF with me very quickly. I'll mention two others. Pan Global, great story, copper stock in Spain. Love the management team. They've done all the right things. They've hit on every hole. It's one of those slightly under the radar ones because you have to understand the infrastructure and everything to understand how good the economics could be. But more to the point, any day now, they'll get the project next door. They'll get the concession from the government, the applications, everything's done. They're just literally waiting for somebody to stamp a piece of paper. That concession next door has 6 to 8 other targets that look exactly the same as Romana, which is what they've been drilling for the last 2 years. I think that has room to get quite large. And given the location, it's another one of those ones where I don't think that I'd be surprised if that company's around in 2 or 3 years. I think somebody takes it out. And I think they take it out a lot higher than where it's trading now. And a third one, I'll just super fast, Alpha Lake Mining. They're in production. They've done a great job getting their costs down at their Campo Morado project. I was shocked at how low their AISC was last quarter. It was like 77 cents a pound on zinc. But the thing to watch for that is two things. One, they will be bringing a gold mine, a second mine into production over the next 2 to 4 months. It should start kicking over in probably late this year, but it'll end in Q1 to get it up to 1,000 tons a day. But also, and I keep harping on this with subscribers, they're doing these MET tests, and if they can find a system, and they think they can, based on initial results, to improve gold and silver recovery, which has always been difficult at Campo Morado, up to even 60-70%, which isn't great globally. But in terms of Campo Morado, you're talking about adding like $50 to $100 a ton. Like, it's not minor. Like, it's a really, mm-hmm. really big deal if they pull that off.
Mm. All right. Very exciting stories. And all the reason in the world for folks listening to this show to go to Metals Investor Forum, sign up for the show, go to the project in person if possible. If not, it's going to be live on the internet. So go to metalsinvestorforum.com, sign up, and you'll hear more from Eric and Gwen and other newsletter writers, including yours truly, in terms of our favorite stocks. All right. Well, thank you both of you for joining me today, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Vancouver in just a few days from now.
Okay.
All righty.
And just so people know, if they're hesitant, we chose the location for this one, so there's tons of square footage. So if you don't want people in your face, you build lots of room for people to move around and not be in each other's way if they don't want to be.
Right. That's the Marriott Hotel. What is it? It's over on the other side of town.
Yeah.
Plenty of room there. That's a spacious environment, so people can distance if they feel uncomfortable. All right. Well, thanks both of you for joining me again. Great to have you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jay.
All righty. Folks, don't go away. We have to go to break, but we'll be right back with John Rubino. He's going to talk about various things, the mining companies, as well as wages and strikes and all kinds of fun things that are going on now, lifting prices of everything. Well, not so much fun if you have to put food on the table. But we'll be right back with John Rubino.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barikoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times and Good Times. It's really good to have John Rubino with us once again. It's dollarcollapse.com for John's excellent website. He writes some things there himself, but he also has a lot of great material from other writers. And one of my favorite things that he provides is his top 10 videos of the week. I seldom have time to watch all of them. Hardly get a chance to watch more than one or two of them, but they're always excellent. There's lots of great material at dollarcollapse.com. Thanks for joining me again, John.
Hey, Jay, good to be back. Yeah, you had something in the top 10 list this week.
Oh, I did.
Your Alistair McLeod interview.
Oh, well, Alistair is always good, and he's going to be with me in a couple of weeks again. So, we have a lot of great guests like yourself, and there's a lot of great people out there, and it's a lot of fun listening to what other people have to say, that's for sure. And so let's start with what you have to say today, John. And I'd like to talk about an article that you recently wrote called Remember Strikes. Well, I'm a little older than you are, John, but I remember very well as a young adult the strikes that were going on in the 70s. And it was these were, the 1970s were a very difficult time. We had rising inflation, very significant double digit inflation that could have been heading to something much worse. It was choked off by Paul Volcker in 1980. But talk to us a little bit about your article, Remember Strikes. I mean, we're starting to see a large number of strikes again taking place, and I would also argue, let's say, slowdowns, work slowdowns. We had to wait a week for our garbage to get picked up here in New York City. I think a lot of people protesting the forced vaccinations and so forth. It's really a big deal. But maybe just sort of give our listeners the picture of your article, Remember Strikes.
Well, Jay, you and I grew up in a very different time in terms of labor and mm-hmm. versus capital and everything. There was a much better balance back then. There was a shortage of good workers, and companies had to pay up for them. And because of that, the workers were able to bargain collectively. And if they had to go on strike, I was a member of the United Steelworkers Union.
Yes, I 17. Learned that. Yeah.
and we went on strike one time, so it was that kind of a world. And today, how many millennials do you think are union members and have gone on a successful strike? Very few, right? Because the power has shifted because of globalization mm-hmm. away from labor and towards capital. And, instead of being benevolent aristocrats, the guys who own the factories and the robots and everything have been like brutal dictators. They basically shut down factories in the U.S. and most of the rest of the developed world, shifted that work to places where workers make a buck an hour or whatever, and there are no real environmental restrictions or safety restrictions or anything, and that took the power away from today's workers. So they no longer have the ability to bargain, or they, until very recently, they didn't have the ability to bargain for better pay or better working conditions. So the rich got richer and richer, and everybody else either stayed the same or got poorer. The bottom 50% of this country economically is less well off mm-hmm. than they were 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you can trace a lot of our current troubles to that growing disparity between the rich and the poor. Now, it's starting to shift back the other way, finally, at long last, because you really can't have the trend of the rich getting richer continue forever, because the poor outnumber them 10 to 1, and so eventually the pendulum has to swing back the other way. And it's starting to now. You see all these help wanted signs everywhere you look. And now McDonald's apparently has set their minimum wage for burger flippers at $21 an hour.
Incredible.
Yeah. And that is basically permanent. You're not going to see them go, next year say, oops, we're going to move you back down to 12 bucks an hour. That's not the way things work. So that's a very good thing in a lot of ways, because it means the people who work with their hands, which is the vast majority of the country, are getting some back that had been taken from them over the past few decades. And it's a good thing, but it's also a very complicated thing economically, because the Fed, when it's calculating inflation, does not count stocks, bonds, and real estate. Those things can go up to infinity, and the Fed doesn't count that as inflation because those are the things that are owned by the rich. Therefore, it's a good thing when they go up. Yeah. But wages going up sends up a red flag for the Fed. They consider that to be inflation, and they consider it to be a signal that they need to tighten. Yeah. And we're kind of there now. The Fed is meeting this week. They're apparently sending out signals that they're at least going to start tapering. In other words, they're going to start shrinking their balance sheet to get rid of all the assets that they've bought with newly created currency over the last few years, and that they're looking at raising interest rates pretty soon. So that's going to, if history is any kind of a guide, that will give us extreme financial market volatility going forward. Mm-hmm. So it's not clear how long the trend of workers being able to demand higher wages will last if we have a giant equities bear market, for instance, or mm-hmm. the bond market flakes out. So things get very complicated very soon, I think.
Yeah, they do. And this reminds me, though, of a conversation that Daniel DiMartino Booth had with Adam Taggart in an interview that I think I mentioned to you. And then I noticed today on your website, you have another article, Another Effect of Rising Wages, and subtitle here, I see another part of this article. I think it's part of this article. Yeah, it is. McDonald's enters a strategic partnership with IBM to automate drive-through lanes. So, I mean, are we looking at Danielle DiMartino Booth is saying, well, a lot of people just think that the corporation is going to roll over and just pay these people whatever they want. She says it doesn't work that way, that they are already spending huge amounts of money for, you know, IT and AI, artificial intelligence and automation of various kinds to eliminate the workers. So maybe the first time it was done by sending jobs overseas to poor countries, and now maybe it's going to be done by robots and other sort of automated technologies that are emerging.
Yes. Well, that's another effect of rising wages. You know, it'll lead the Fed to raise interest rates, and it also leads companies to try to automate as much work as possible when the cost of that work is going up in their human workforce. And, you know, we'll definitely see that. See, things were going to be automated in any event. Robots were going to do most of the repetitive work eventually. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that wages are going up, that accelerates the process. So, yeah, we'll see. At least for the next few years, companies will pay whatever they have to do their business and get the orders out the door, right? But they're not going to pay really high wages any longer than they have to if they can automate a lot of this stuff. And you know, artificial intelligence and robotics have reached the point where a lot of stuff can be done that couldn't be done before. You know, look at those videos of the dancing robots from Boston Dynamics. Those things are terrifying. I mean, they're really cute, but you know, would you want to get into a fight with something like that? Something that agile and that strong? No. And so that's our future. You know, these things, that's the future of warfare for sure. And it's the future of a lot of basic industry as well.
Mm-hmm.
And see, you know, it's just so interesting what's happening now, because we have really low birth rates in the U.S. And one group of economists are terrified that there won't be enough workers to support all the retirees in the future. At the same time, we've got automation accelerating like this, and another group of economists are terrified that there won't be enough jobs for what workers remain. And so who knows how this plays out exactly, but you know, it could be in an ideal world, we find a perfect balance where lower birth rates mean fewer workers, but there are exactly enough jobs left over that the robots aren't doing for those people. I doubt if it works out that way, but
yeah. Well, we can hope, but I could just mention that over the lunch hour, Henry Kissinger was on Neil Cavuto talking about, I guess he's written a book about this, and he's very, very worried about what it's going to do to the human race in terms of it's moving so fast. Technology is growing almost exponentially, that the knowledge and the power of technology, and his concern is that the humans may lose autonomy to robots. And of course, that's a subject for another day. But a fascinating subject. And I mean, Henry Kissinger has got to be getting up in the years. I don't know exactly how old he was. He was off, his age is showing, but he's still obviously a brilliant mind, like him or not. And just expressing those concerns. And but in any event, so we have rising inflation, no doubt about it. What do you think the Fed is going to do? Eric Coffin was saying a little bit ago that people really need to be watching. I guess it's Thursday, or is it Wednesday? The Fed is going to be coming out.
Well, it's usually Wednesday.
Yeah, so it must be this Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. Eric's at 11 o'clock Pacific, so that's 2 o'clock. It's about right, I guess. So I guess they're going. We'll be listening to he's expecting they're going to announce some tapering. But how long can this tapering go, John, before – I mean, it's like you say, volatility, and the people that run the world own stocks. I don't know.
Well, that's really the $100 trillion question, isn't it? How far can they go this time? Because they've tried to do this a couple of times in the past, right? Mm-hmm. They start to raise interest rates, or at least they start to let their balance sheet run off a bit. And in every case in the past, the stock market has just totally blown up on them. And then the Fed panics and takes it all back and says, oh, you know, did we say we were going to tighten? Never mind. We're actually going to cut interest rates, and mm-hmm. you won't have to. See, I think this time around is the time when people realize that that's a permanent state of affairs, that there's literally nothing the Fed can do to rein in inflation without blowing up the financial system, and they don't want to do that. So we're going to have to live with accelerating inflation, official inflation, as it's defined by the government and by individuals. You know, we've always had inflation over the last few decades, but it's been narrowly confined to stocks, bonds, and real estate. Now it's broadening out to everything else. And so we're going to have to live with it. So will people then start acting accordingly? I think they probably will. And I think we get something like the 1970s, only much, much bigger, because we were pretty healthy financially back in the 1970s.
Compared to now.
We're emphatically not financially healthy right now, which means any kind of crisis in the financial markets now risks metastasizing into a hyperinflation or a global depression. And the guys in charge of monetary policy know that, but they don't know what to do. You know, they don't have the 20% interest rates that Paul Volcker had back in the day to fix things. Mm-hmm. But they also understand that runaway inflation leads to the same place, right? It leads to a huge crash. And it seems that we're at the point now where that's really our choice. And it just remains for people to figure it out and for that to become the meme, you know, the general consensus out there that there is no fix and we're heading off a cliff one way or another. And what are you going to do? You know, and that's in the 1970s, that's when gold and silver really took off. You know, gold and silver were kind of choppy, but not up all that much mid-decade in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And they made their gigantic moves, these epic parabolic runs in the last couple of years of the decade. That's when people finally accepted that inflation was a real thing and it wasn't going away.
Right.
So we're headed for something like that, I think.
I think we are. The difference, as you pointed out, is that then we were strong enough economically. I mean, I don't know what our debt to GDP, the federal debt to GDP or our total debt to GDP was much, much, much lower. I mean, now we're over 100%. I don't know. Do you have any idea? I can't remember without checking, but it was less than 60%, I think.
Oh, it was minuscule compared to today.
35% or 40% or something like that, and now we're
remember that,
over 100%.
That's just government debt. We have all kinds of other debt that has skyrocketed, too. So total debt, especially if you include derivatives, are orders of magnitude higher than back then. So.
Well, speaking of derivatives, I just wonder to what extent the derivative markets, and Alistair MacLeod has talked about Basel III, and you know, January 3rd, I think it goes into effect in for everyone, finally. And his thinking is that that's going to reduce the derivative markets very dramatically, and gold and silver, which has been a downward effect on those prices, and it will also affect, I think, other commodities where banks are no longer allowed to put those derivatives on their asset side of their balance sheet. So we'll see about that. But it's just going to be interesting. And what are your thoughts about gold? Because we're just not really seeing gold rise with the other prices, other commodities, even in terms of the money that's being created.
Well, the vast majority of people still believe the Fed that this is transitory, you know, that our current troubles are kind of something that will pass through.
Yeah.
And next year, things will go back to normal. Gold and silver will respond when people realize that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 months from now or maybe tomorrow, who knows, people will realize that that this is just the new reality, and they'll be looking around for inflation hedges and safe haven assets, yada, yada. And gold and silver always do well in times like that. So the parabolic move will come, and as boring as it is now, this is still a really good time for the gold miners, because gold is high enough, even though it's not spiking, it's high enough to generate lots of free cash flow for the big mining companies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually a good time for precious metals investors if you're picking the highest quality big gold miners, which will generate tons of free cash, and the best quality juniors, which will be bought out with that free cash at some point in the next few years. So all you really need to make money in the gold stock market is patience at this point.
Yeah, patience sometimes hard to come by when you look at Bitcoin going up as it is and some of these other things. So you think maybe the time will come when people say, well, maybe Bitcoin doesn't really have the value. We know for sure that gold and silver is tangible. We can pick it up. We can use it. I mean, even a very interesting article recently in Venezuela where they're starting to use, in Bloomberg, had this article where they're starting to use actual people going out in the mines and or into the streams and picking up flakes of gold and using it to stay alive. I mean, it really is still true, even though it's hard for us to imagine in an advanced economy like the United States. But yeah, do you think that maybe eventually, sooner or later, people realize maybe Bitcoin doesn't really have any value?
Well, the cryptocurrency market is the dot-coms of the 1990s. Think of them that mm-hmm. way. You know,
yeah,
they're just rocketing, and every new one that comes out goes way up. And, you know, a few of the dot-com companies survived and thrived. Amazon.com, for instance. So it could be that the best cryptos end up being very successful versions of whatever it is they are going forward, and most of the little no-name coins end up failing, just like in the dot-com. So that's possible. But, bubble markets are always the thing you look at and think, oh, my God, whatever I have isn't as much up as much as this. You know, but then when the bubble bursts, those things go back down. So it's completely possible that most of the cryptos can go down by 90% in the next big market crash. Highly unlikely that that'll happen with gold and silver. You know, they'll be islands of stability in a sea of chaos. Cryptos may have a big role in the world going forward. That remains to be seen. They're very interesting. But I don't think they preclude gold and silver. You know, you definitely want something that's physical when things really get crazy, and only gold and silver are physical forms of money.
All right, we're just about out of time here, but a couple of other topics maybe quickly. Australia, interest rates, bond rates are rising very dramatically. Do you think the Reserve Bank of Australia is just letting it happen, or what do you think is going on there?
That's what they did. They just stood back and didn't try to depress an interest rate. It was either the 3 or the 4-year note, I forget, or 2 or 3, one of those, kind of a medium short-term note. But as soon as the central bank did not intervene, the interest rates spiked. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in a lot of countries. You know, the Canadian 5-year is up, the yield is up from 0.4% to 1.5% just this year. And mm-hmm. lots of other countries are seeing their interest rates spike. So that could be our future right there.
Well, and another topic we're not going to have time for are the elections in Virginia and New Jersey and elsewhere. We'll have to leave that for another time after we analyze the results and see what it might mean, John. We'll like to have you back on to talk about that perhaps sometime in the near future.
That'd
so we'll have to leave it go at that for now. Thank you so much, John, for being with us once again. Always a pleasure having you. Folks, next week we're going to have Lynn Alden with us and Michael Oliver returns. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.